Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled that I have in the studio with me a Florida writer. It's really just wonderful to welcome to the studio today. And she's looking very Florida, so pretty, in a lovely sundress, Pam Moll. Hi.
Hi. Welcome, Patsy. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Well, I am happy to have you here because we are going to be talking about your new book called Peppermint Mocha Murder, a nice cozy mystery. And everyone knows that I love cozy mysteries because my sister, Natalie, is a connoisseur of cozy mysteries. She reads every cozy mystery she can get her hands on. And then we have Rita Moreau has joined Joy on Paper as a special contributor, and she does little book promos for cozy mysteries. And I know that she's already anxious to read your new book.
That's awesome.
Because she wants to do one for you. So, you know, I just want to say one thing before I start talking to Pam, that this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. And in fact, you should have an intellectual property lawyer sort of tucked there in your back pocket. I have been talking to quite a few authors lately, and I know, Pam, I'm sure that you get a lot of emails from companies that are trying to get you to sign up with them, both for products or to do, maybe it's press releases, or maybe they promise to take your book to Hollywood. And I just want to warn everybody, please, please, never, ever sign anything that a company sends you over the internet. You should never sign anything without a lawyer in general. I mean, that's why you need a lawyer, because you always get in trouble when you sign without a lawyer. But I am particularly upset because lately so many of the listeners who listen to the program, and they've been emailing me with these contracts that they've been getting on the internet. And you cannot sign anything, okay? I'm just telling everybody that. So I'm sure you get a lot of these solicitations.
You know, I do. And in addition, a word of advice, even when you sign a contract with even a reputable company, you should still read all the contract's rules. You know, for example, like Audible is a very reputable recording. You know, we all listen to their books. An author can make more money if you sign a 7-year contract. So a lot of, you know, authors will say, oh, I want to make $5 a book versus $3 on an Audible book. But if you look at the technologies changing so much, over 7 years there may be another big player in the market, and you would be locked into Audible for 7 years.
Exactly. And this is the kind of thing that you have to look at writing as a business. It is something that you have to invest in, just as if you were opening a coffee shop. And we're going to be talking about that because Pam's new book is set in a coffee shop. So it is a business, and you have to invest in it. Just as if you're going to make cupcakes, there's all the ingredients you need. If you're going to write a book, there are certain ingredients you need. One of them, of course, is to get your copyright done properly. Don't do one of those things where you send it in the mail certified to yourself. That's not real, believe me. So, and Larson & Larson, Bill Larson is he's our legal eagle here at Joy on Paper. And if you go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com, there is a form there that you can fill in with your intellectual property questions and send it in. And next time Bill is in the studio, he will answer the questions, okay? Now, I want we'll talk in a minute about your book, and I just want to, I'm hoping something is happening. Just a moment. I think we're going to have some fun here.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I think I've got somebody on the line. So I'm just waiting to hear from Big Ed who it is. But that's all right. Meanwhile, we're going to talk here to Pam. Let's talk. Okay, who's on?
We've got Karen Carbo on.
Karen. Okay, Karen, I'm so glad that you made it today. How are you?
I can hardly hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you are.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I certainly can.
Okay, well, okay. So I am so happy to have you on the program today. It's turning out to be a full program. So tell us, Karen, what's happening with you? Tell us about your new book.
Well, In Praise of Difficult Women, it's 29 personal essays about women who have been called, quote-unquote, difficult.
Oh, boy.
all across history, a sort of multicultural sorority of the dead and the living, women we admire, and women who have bucked the cultural trends to live fulfilling and interesting lives.
Now, you know, I was thinking about your book, and wow, how did you decide which women to select to write about?
Well, it was a long process. The book, you know, took many years to write, and you know, I wanted to always write about specific women who were meaningful to me. So, you know, the women I call my foundational women are women that have inspired me since I was a little girl. Amelia Earhart, Jane Goodall, Martha Gellhorn, who was a great war, very brave war correspondent, and we know her most as Ernest Hemingway's third wife, Frida Kahlo, the painter, and then also women who, you know, inspired me today, Elizabeth Warren, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and so forth. So, you know, it was a very, very long process, and many women were sort of on the list and then rotated off for what we call, quote-unquote, Volume 2. But I wanted to write about a broad range of women, a diverse range of women who also had all different kinds of personalities, because women are difficult, but we are all difficult in different ways.
Now, when you as you said, it's taken you quite a few years to write this book because in many cases you've had to do some very serious research into this.
Right, correct. Yeah, it did. It was interesting because when the book was under when I got the book under contract, it was sort of a very difficult world, different world. We thought we were going to be having a female president, and we sort of thought we had arrived, you know, that we had moved the culture forward in terms of equality and acceptance of women in positions of power and so forth, and that turned out not to be the case, of course. And so, you know, there was a lot of sort of rethinking as the cultural moment changed. But, you know, ultimately, what I was hoping for and still hope for is that people will pick up the book, and you know, it's great to have a Me Too moment, and it's great for time to be up, and it's great to have a manifesto and a call to action. But we still have to live our lives every single day, and how do we do that? How do we step up? How do we advocate for ourselves? How do we be difficult women? And I'm hoping that you know the stories here will sort of help guide us as we move forward.
Well, I have in the studio with me an author. She's going to be talking about her books today. And let me just introduce her. Her name is Pam Mall. Pam, say hi.
Hi.
Okay, so this is Karen Carbo. And this book, you know, I'm sort of torn between all of these things that are happening about women today. As you said, many people had thought we would have a female president by now. But, you know, and in other countries, now I lived in England for many years, and when Margaret Thatcher was there, wow, it was a pretty amazing period of time. So she was, you know, she was in many ways a difficult woman too.
Sure she was. Yes, she was, exactly. And I mean, you know, I think the thing is that difficult women, you know, it's interesting as I go around with the book because, you know, difficult women are often heroic and they often, you know, are inspirational in a very kind of obvious way if you look at someone like Amelia Earhart. But, yes, there are certainly difficult women like Margaret Thatcher, who is not in the book, you know, who sort of lived in a, you know, made things difficult for others as well. So, you know, I mean, it's just because you're a difficult woman, that doesn't mean you're necessarily, you know, someone that people want to emulate.
Well, you know, one of the things of the many people that you write about, what did you find particularly about Frida Kahlo? I was in Mexico City, and I was so impressed, of course, with her work there, and with the struggle that she had to that was really her life.
Right.
What did you think about her?
Well, you know, I'm a longtime fan of Frida Kahlo. You know, I think we need to remember that you know, when she died, she was just known as Diego Rivera, the great muralist. Wife. She was little Frida. She was sort of eccentric. She had her little paintings. But of course, he was the son, right? He sort of blotted her out. And, you know, when she was sort of discovered in the 70s, you know, why I included her in the book is because she made the world look at female suffering in a way that I think we hadn't before. And you look at her paintings even now and you cannot look away. And I think that that's something that's very kind of under the radar difficult, is that she's always stuck to her vision. She did not, you know, pull any punches in terms of what it meant to be a woman suffering in a woman's body. And I thought that was quite radical at the time.
And other characters that you have in the book, other, you know, women, it's such a mix of women. You also have Elizabeth Taylor.
Correct. Yes, Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, I think we always need to remember, you know, because there's a historical component to this book, right? I mean, it's all across the 20th and into the 21st century. And I think it's always important to remember that we're the daughters of the time in which we were born and raised. And Elizabeth Taylor was born in the 30s. She became a Hollywood star very, very young at a time when actors and actresses were basically owned by the studio system, and they were required to behave in a certain manner. And Elizabeth Taylor was never having any of that. You know, she was, you know, feminine and obviously sexual. And it was interesting because she would make movies and they had a special censor to kind of keep an eye on her cleavage to make sure not too much of that was being displayed. You know, she was sort of this force of nature that could not be controlled or contained. And then when, you know, she became older after she was an icon, she was one of the first people who spoke on behalf of AIDS research and brought awareness to AIDS. You know, when her friends and families and her agent was saying, step away from that, don't do it. It's going to ruin your reputation. So she was quite courageous in being exactly who she wanted to be.
Now, one of the women I know wasn't included, but Paula Poundstone was on this program, and wow, there was a difference.
I love her.
Don't you love her? Isn't she wonderful?
I was
so thrilled to have her on Joy on Paper because she is, wow. Now, she has also been one of those women who has just forged ahead and made a statement of just courage and facing life and just head on.
Yeah, no, she's amazing, and I think it's always really important to remember that that humor is transgressive regardless of whether you're a man or a woman. And if you're a female comedian, you are really stepping out. You are really, you know, calling things as they are, and you know, it's always a radical move to be a funny woman.
So what do you define difficult women? How, if somebody says, well, what is a difficult woman? What does it
right.
mean to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I said, you know, basically a difficult woman, there's two things. A difficult woman is someone who thinks her needs, goals, values, and life mission is at least as important as everyone around her. And it, one of the first reviews by a man said, well, that sets a pretty low bar. And I said, yes, exactly. Thank you for making my point. A woman gets called difficult. Really, she risks being called difficult whenever she does something that inconveniences somebody around her. You know, I mean, I've been in meetings before where I was expected to have an opinion. But if I did not come off my opinion to make sure there was sort of consensus around the table, I would get called difficult. So it doesn't really take much to be called a difficult woman. A difficult woman is someone who is, you know, not more interested in being who she is than in meeting the cultural expectations of what it means to be a woman in the time in which she lived.
Well, you know, Pam here, who's now, she's an author. She's one of these women who does everything, and she's a businesswoman. And Pam, you've had to forge right into the business world. It's been difficult for you.
Absolutely. Over the years, I've been doing the business world for over 20 years, and you know, had to kind of climb the ladder. But you know, once you've proven yourself, I feel like I'm an equal. And of course, I write all my stories are fiction, but they have strong protagonists that are females. I don't know if they're difficult, but they're pretty feisty.
They're very feisty.
Feisty can be difficult for sure.
Oh yes, all of her characters. The women don't take any guff from anybody. which I think is important. And that's why Pam's books are very strong. Her characters are very compelling.
They are.
Pam, tell me some of your titles.
So the most recent one, which actually was just introduced or announced yesterday, is Peppermint Mocha Murder.
Well, this is her she's sort of a dual thing, dual personality here. This she's just started a series of cozy mysteries, which have recipes in it. I love books with recipes. I always do that. But she also writes stories about the sea because she loves the sea, and her women are very strong, and they're really great books.
Nice. Yeah, so I did start out with Sea Adventures, more like a Clive Cussler type novel where the protagonist is a female, and actually later on in the story, I'm not giving away a spoiler alert here, but she has an identical twin sister, so they kind of team up to do some treasure hunting, and so they are very strong female protagonists. And then, like Patsy said just recently, I switched to the cozy mystery genre, and I have an owner of a coffee shop and a book nook, and she kind of takes it on herself to be a sleuth and a detective in a murder mystery.
Cool.
Yeah, it is cool. She's and I just love the way that Pam, you know, does a full-time, hard, very complex business world type job, but she also, you know, is up early in the morning writing, which is wonderful. And it shows that women can do so much when they want to.
Yes, indeed.
So, now, what is your background? Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this book and in writing.
Well, I've been, this is my 15th book. I have been supporting myself as a writer since 1990. I've written novels. Before In Praise of Difficult Women, I wrote a quartet of books called the Kick-Ass Women series. And they were small biographies and sort of philosophical tracts about Katherine Hepburn, Georgia O'Keeffe, Coco Chanel, and Julia Child. So I've been interested in this idea of inspiring women for quite some time. I've done a lot of magazine work. I teach intensive writing workshops, and you know, I sort of have many, many irons in the fire so that I can support myself as a writer.
Now, have you had the opportunity to meet any of these women that you've written about? Because some of them, like, wouldn't it be wonderful to meet Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
It would be. I did receive a really wonderful letter from her after I wrote the book, and when it was in galley form, I sent a copy to all of the women. I have interviewed some of them, And I didn't really, even though I had some information from my direct interviews, because these are personal essays and I also wanted everyone to be sort of on the same, I wanted to approach them with kind of the same spirit. I didn't, kind of use a lot of that information from my profiles. Billie Jean King, Elizabeth Warren, J.K. Rowling. So I had met some of them before. Certainly, and I was very gratified when they were, I heard from them and they were happy to have been included in the book.
Well, I think it's a wonderful selection. I was impressed with the Shonda Rhimes.
Shonda Rhimes is very interesting. Since I began writing the book, Shonda Rhimes has really sort of begun speaking out. She defines herself as an introvert, and obviously she's a genius storyteller. She works very hard, and her imagination seems to be limitless. And one of the reasons why I included her is because she's a woman who really sort of very graciously accepts everything that is her due, and continues to think that the harder she works, the more she deserves. I think oftentimes women, even women who are successful, feel like, okay, I've made it, but I don't want to be greedy, and I don't want to, Shonda owns Thursday nights on TV, and I think she would own Wednesday and Friday as well. I think she would take everything that she believes is her due. And quite graciously at that. So, that's why she's included in the book, and she's certainly a wonderful inspiration and quite fascinating.
Well, it must have been difficult to keep it down to 29.
It was indeed. I have a very long list for volume 2.
That's what I was going to say, and I'm sure Paula Poundstone's going to be in that one because
I'm putting her on the list.
You have to put her on the list because I think she is just she was so much fun to talk to, and as I said, she has gone through so much, and she is a strong woman.
She sure is.
Now, one of the things about a book like this, I think it's a great gift book for people. Because I like anthologies myself, because when I'm giving a gift, because you never know what somebody likes for sure, but if you have an anthology, there's bound to be at least 2 or 3 stories that they like. And in this book, you have 29, so you might not. I think everyone will be interested in all of them, but there are some that you are particularly drawn to and that inspire, because everybody has a different sort of level of what inspires them.
Right, exactly. And I also, I have had friends who have read the book straight through, and, that has one kind of reading experience. And then I have friends who read a chapter a night for inspiration, and I also have friends who sort of have been cherry-picking. I've heard from readers that they'll kind of cherry-pick who they feel, that they want to read about and be inspired by on any particular day. So, yes, it's very much a multi-purpose reading experience.
Well, I was like that. I cherry picked because I didn't start at the beginning, and I picked the ones that I first sort of the people some that perhaps I knew or I had some reason that they had touched my life before, and so I read those ones first, and then I went back, and I love that kind of book where you can and you pick it up a second time because you want to read the stories again. I was particularly interested in the Carrie Fisher story.
Right. Carrie Fisher. Well, I think we're all still sad that she's no longer with us. I felt particularly close to her because I had gone to film school at USC behind George Lucas, but when I was there, Star Wars was it, and the style of filmmaking we were all taught was sort of along the Star Wars line. And one of the reasons why I love her so much is that she could have, rested on her laurels. She could have been Princess Leia for her whole life, and just that would have been it. But she was a gifted writer. She was enormously funny, and she also was very open at a time before all of this sort of transparency that we are appreciating now. She was very open about her mental health struggles and her addiction issues, and she also managed to make very funny stories and had a few one-woman plays that she dealt with it. So she was quite amazing and hugely funny.
Absolutely. And I was so honored that I actually wrote a film for Debbie Reynolds.
Oh, wow.
And I was very honored that really just a few weeks before she passed away, Debbie called here to the studio to wish my listeners a Happy New Year. And that was, I think it was one of the last things that she taped. And so,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was very, I was very moved by that chapter about Carrie Fisher.
Thank you.
And now, of the, some of the politicians, why did you select Eva Perón?
You know, Eva Perón has always fascinated me. And she was somebody who was, you know, sort of hugely, I mean, you have to kind of know, you know, people will have to read it because it's, a lot of it is also about Argentinian history and how Argentina, at the time of Eva Perón, you know, weirdly enough, there were more women in government in Argentina than anywhere else in the Americas. She brought the vote for women to Argentina. And, you know, she also, weirdly enough, you know, Juan Perón, her husband, would not have been the ruler that he and the despot that he was without Eva. Eva was far more popular than he was. She was both a megalomaniac and had a huge heart for the poor and the suffering. So she was an extraordinarily complicated and flamboyant woman. And I could not resist her story. I was, you know, I saw Evita back when Evita, but I just could not resist her story. It was just fascinating to me.
Well, I think all of the stories are fascinating, and it's called In Praise of Difficult Women, Life Lessons, 29 Heroines Who Dared to Break the Rules. And Karen Carbo is the author, and it's available wherever books are sold. And Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. I think
you've
done a wonderful job with this book, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And I have some suggestions too. So
awesome! Email me.
Okay, I will, because I just love these stories of women who can inspire other women to get out there and do things and be active and to make a difference in this world. And that's what I'm trying to do here with Joy on Paper. I want to be able to tell listeners that there, one of the joys of life is to read. And for writers, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. And you've discovered that joy, and Pam here has discovered that joy, and I just love good writing. So I'm so happy that you joined me today.
Thank you, Patsy, and thanks for letting me crash the party, Pam.
No problem. Nice meeting you.
That's okay. We just love it. Okay, bye-bye now, Karen.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we'll take a quick commercial break. Okay, it's ready there? Good. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I have my guest here in the studio, Pam Moll. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, let's talk about your new book, Peppermint Mocha Murder. I love the title.
Thanks. First, I have to say, you introduced me earlier about wearing a sundress. I do have a lunch appointment afterwards.
Well,
last night I was thinking, I didn't get a manicure before. I realized no one can see me.
But she looks Florida. She is all Florida. We've had a few bad days of weather here, but generally speaking, it's perfect here, isn't it? Don't you just love it?
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Don't you just love it? I love this area so much. And really, it is for anyone who's looking for a place to come for a vacation. This is the ideal place. You come here to the beach. We have miles and miles of glorious beaches, and just have a fun time reading.
It is. It's great inspiration for writing. In fact, Peppermint Mocha Murder is based on a coffee shop owner who is kind of a sleuth. She finds a body behind her coffee shop. And by the way, the whole setting is based out of South Florida, a small little village. And she's sort of a newcomer to town. So when she inherited some money from her grandfather, and one of the stipulations in the will was that she had to open a business close to her Granny D, and so she opened the coffee shop Book Nook, and that's where she, started her business, and she's new in that area. And when she discovers the body, as time goes on, more clues and clues come out that kind of point her to being a suspect, even though she doesn't have a motive. So she decides to kind of investigate the murder herself, and at the same time is kind of hauling for the local deputy. Of course, a small town village, they don't have CSI and all that gory stuff. So she has all these little clues that she's clumsily going around town looking for, and keeps, she's always one step ahead of the deputies. And then, of course, at the end of the story, you find out who did it. And
yeah, that's why it's a cozy mystery. So we have all the fun in between of just delightful characters that you've developed. Let's talk about Molly. Okay.
Molly Brewster. So she's very eccentric. She has red frizzy hair, and she's very clumsy, and there's a lot of humor in a cozy mystery, and with raccoons landing on people's heads, and just a lot of driving golf carts into the swamps, and chased by alligators, and just a lot of fun stuff. She's allergic to peppermint, so this is the first book in the series, and conveniently is called Peppermint Mocha Murder. It does lead her to the investigation because there is some peppermint
element
involved.
That's part of the mystery,
right? But she'll, as we carry on with the series, that will be some of her traits that she has.
Well, isn't it fun where, I mean, you sat down one day and you said, okay, I want to write a cozy mystery series. But to have that opportunity to come out with the characters and everything from naming them to thinking about the color of their hair, isn't that part of
it? It is a lot of fun. And writing is challenging enough no matter what genre. If you write nonfiction or you're writing a recipe book or a training book, but when you write a murder mystery, you have all the elements of writing a book with characters and plots and settings, and character development. And then when you write a murder mystery, you have to add in motives and clues and evidence and suspects. And, you know, and so that's like a, I heard once that to write a book, it's like there's more elements to it than building a skyscraper.
Oh, I think so. Now, Mary Higgins Clark was on last week, and she was saying how she knows her characters. I asked her, why do your books just read so well? They just flow, and she takes us into the lives of her characters. Now, she's been doing it for a long time. She's 90 years old. But I told her her last book was just as fresh as her first book. And she said part of it is exactly this, knowing her characters, knowing who they are and what they look like, and just knowing where what you want from them, what you feel for them. Is that how?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. You know, you have a kind of a mindset like what they would do, you know, what they look like. You know, like you said, the color of their eyes, how they would dress, how they would act. Now, Molly having bright, you know, frizzy reddish orange hair, in my mind, she has to wear a lot of wigs and disguises because if she's out,
People recognize
her. Yeah, I recognize her. So that's the fun part. She's always kind of wearing hats and glasses and, you know, sleuthing around in her disguises.
What did you do when you started this, you knew you were going to write a series.
Yes, and that's very common in a cozy mystery. In fact, a lot of traditional publishers and agents will want to know what the next book is in series. So you think of like Murder, She Wrote, or any of these Hallmark murder mysteries that are on TV now. They have a series of them because you have a strong character that, you know, solves a murder, and then like Murder, She Wrote, the next episode, there's another murder in their tiny little town, and yeah, she's solving that. So I knew it was going to be a series of different books. But at the end, you always find out who the murderer was, and then the next book starts fresh with a new murder and new clues.
And, yeah, and that's part of the fun. So how long did it take you to sort of preparation-wise and then writing the book?
You know, since I wrote kind of the C stories and I just switched the genre last year, it probably took me about 2 months or so to really analyze it. But today, even I read, I'm a voracious reader of cozy mysteries now. I read probably a book a week myself, and then I studied a lot about cozy mysteries, and it took me about 4 months to write this book.
Now, what is the name of the coffee shop?
Addicted to the Bean.
I love it. I love it. I think that is such a great name because everybody knows that I drink a lot of coffee. I drink a lot of coffee, and so I'm addicted to coffee. I've come from Northern Michigan, and in Northern Michigan, kids start drinking coffee when they're babies. I mean, literally when they're babies. Their grandfathers put the coffee in a saucer and let us drink.
You needed to keep warm there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we are crazy for coffee. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that my brother sends me, a special Arco coffee from that he gets from Northern Michigan, and it's just fantastic. So I love the setting. I think it's a great setting. And of course, we have in there a nice mix of characters. She has a grandma, which is nice, Granny D, and
she's quite crankerous, and she's always kind of getting in the ways, but she's actually got some pretty good sleuthing techniques herself.
and you've sort of peopled the town, and you can keep adding new and interesting characters all along the way.
Yep, you have some of the same characters, just like in Murder, She Wrote, in some of those series. You know, the same characters over and over, the same deputies. Occasionally a detective will retire throughout the series. And then, you know, in a cozy mystery, the character, it's more about the event, you're solving the murder. You don't have to develop the character as much as in a one book where you want to see the character grow throughout the book. So she'll have some of the same characteristics, but over time in the series, she may, you know, she's young and single, you know, she's just starting to fall for this cop. She could get married, have kids, but you know, so they slowly develop throughout the series.
Yeah, well, that's part of the fun, and that you can keep it going for many years.
Yes,
you know, and particularly a coffee shop is a great setting because you have people coming in and out all the time.
Right,
and And sometimes you can overhear stories, and sometimes people bring in their problems to a coffee shop. And so it really is a rich environment for an author.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of juicy gossip she overhears. And then being in the setting that it's in a sort of a tourist area, there are a lot of new people coming in.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I love books that are set here in Florida. It's always really great to read local authors, and one of the wonderful things about having this program is that I can have local authors here in the studio with me. And one of the Florida authors that I want to mention is Carl Hyacin. He just signed his first middle grade novel book deal in 5 years. It's the first one that he's done in 5 years, and it was just signed last week. And the name of the book is called Squirm. And it's about a boy who's searching for his absentee father. Now, if anybody knows Florida writers, they know that Carl Hyacin is really very, very popular.
I love him. Yeah, I've read all his adult books, not the middle.
Yeah, yeah. So
like
he's been
Skinny Dipping. Yeah, exactly. All of those are very good.
Aren't they great? And so it was really exciting that he just got this deal for his first middle grade in 5 years. Now, tell us, in addition to this, the new cozy mystery, tell us about your other books, your wonderful sea adventure books.
So those are set, unlike the cozy mystery that's set in one single town, those kind of span over different areas. It's more like an island off Peru where they go and do the treasure hunting. So that is a three-book series, but you don't really have to read them in order. They start out where you could read the last one first, and it's going to
Which
fill
I
you
did.
In.
I started back.
You read Diamond Island.
I started backwards.
Yeah, so the first, that last one is set more in Florida because the couple starts out on a cruise ship in the first book, get stranded on an island. They get left behind on the cruise ship.
Uh-huh.
And so they find out a lot about each other. The second story is where they're going back to investigate stuff on the island. And then the third one is when they're back in Florida and they decide to take a group to go and explore. There's like a hidden treasure there that they go to look for.
Well, that's I love Treasure Island and treasure types of books. So it is sort of in the Clive Cussler vein of looking for treasure, looking for something. And so and it's the writing is really great. You know, it's really
Thanks.
Nice and strong. And tell us about the protagonist, the twins.
The twins. Well, they was actually introduced. So if you didn't read the first ones, the second book, the first book, you only really meet Riley, the first twin, and she's the one who gets stuck on the island. She's kind of hiding out because there's a big battle with the pharmaceutical company she used to work for. And so in the second book, it surprises a lot of readers because she's supposed to be on this island, stuck on an island. She walks into the courtroom, and everybody's going, wait, how can she be here? And you find out it's her identical twin. And so she comes in to help her get, you know, out of this kind of mess. And then, so at the end, the two of them go back. They hadn't seen each other in 10 years. They go back and hunt for this treasure that their family had.
Which is, I was happy in a way that I started with this third book because I really got into it. I really like that search. And so and then I went to the first book. So now I haven't gotten to the middle book yet. So I
might have done
three,
a spoiler
three,
alert.
1, 2. But that's all right because the character is very, the character, particularly Riley, she's very strong. As we were talking about, you know, difficult women. This is a woman who's not going to take, you know, nonsense.
Absolutely.
And she is a strong woman. And I think she's probably, you know, a lot coming from your own personality because you're a strong woman, a businesswoman. And you had your own business. You had your own.
Yep. I had my own toy manufacturing company in the late 1990s, early 2000.
Which was not easy at that time.
No, it wasn't.
It's not easy today for a woman to have a business.
There was no really internet as we see it today, Google. You know, so I had to make trips to China to make sure the plants were doing okay with my toys. And, you know, I had to deal with, you know, 120 manufacturing reps around the U.S. and all the major cities that sold my products to all the retailers. So it was a very demanding job. And in a lot of the retail gift shows that you go to in the World Trade Centers, are on weekends, over the long weekends. So, you know, I had young kids at the time, and, you know, I realized, and they happen usually at the beginning of the year from January to about March. And I remember my daughter was starting basketball or something, and about March she goes, "Mom, you've missed every game," because every weekend I would be at a toy fair, you know, showing my toys to the retailers. So eventually, as they got older, I sold that business. And that's actually what got me into writing. Some of my products, I wrote nonfiction type booklets and calendars. I was in Barnes & Noble and Borders and had some really fast-selling products. So I was writing those catalogs and descriptions of the toys. But over the years, people said, you know, wow, your products have been on Jay Leno, you've been on QVC, Home Shopping Network, you ought to write a book. I thought, oh, you know, it's 10 years later, maybe I should write a book. So I start writing the book, and it was started out as a nonfiction book, and I thought, oh, this is, you know, where does this go? It's, my autobiography is not that exciting. So I turned it into a fiction book and made it more of a legal thriller where she's a small-time patent owner. She's invented some toys, and a giant toy company tries to steal her designs, and she has to fight them. So that's where that book came from.
Okay, well, see, that's what I said. I knew she was a strong woman, I can tell you. Because that's one of the things about being a writer is you have to be strong. You have to be able to sort of grab the bull by the horns, and that's something that a Texan would understand because you were born in Texas?
I wasn't born in Texas. I was born in Chicago, but I lived there for 30 years.
You lived there. And we also lived in Texas for a long time. As I said, both of my boys were born in Houston. And you know that, you know, Texas, any woman living around Texas gets strong.
That's
you
right.
You have to get strong. And it's so important as a writer to really be able to have that organizational ability of a business person.
Absolutely.
Because it is, as I said at the beginning of the program, it is a business.
It is.
And
you're running your own business. And you have, you know, even though whether you're traditionally published, indie published, you're having to have a fan base and, you know, reach out to readers. You have marketing. Plus it's a business. You have to learn to be disciplined every day and write. And when I first start writing, I listened to Stephen King's book, and, you know, he said he writes every day, 365 days a year, even on Christmas. He gets up, writes. And so I just made it, you know, every morning I get up and write. And sometimes I get to write on weekends or in the evenings, but I, you know, get myself up, write. Sometimes I write on airplanes. In the early days, I was writing at volleyball games and my daughter in between her volleyball game at tournaments. But so you really just have to sit down and write every day because that's your business. And if you don't write, you don't have the material,
product.
A product.
You need a product.
Absolutely.
So what are you doing to promote your books? Do you do a lot of Facebook, a lot of what?
You know, I do a lot of social media. Over time, your webpage as an author has like a subscriber list. And so fans that have read your book, they'll go out and, you know, fill in to be notified if you have a new book. And I'm a writer and I write every day fiction, but I'm not very good about reaching out to my, you know, I don't send a lot of emails out. So feel free to sign up on my
mailing
list.
What is your webpage?
GoPamela.com. GoPamela.
GoPamela. That's a good name.
Very easy.
GoPamela.com. I like that. That's good.
Well, I write under a couple of different names, and Pam is always the first one, Pamela. So GoPamela seemed to make sense.
Yeah, it does. It's a very, very good name for an author. I like it. GoPamela.
Very simple.
Once you have that out there, people will remember it.
Right.
I like that. That's good.
So they sign up as a subscriber. They get email alerts when new books are coming out. What's really helpful, too, is as a new author, like reviews, and now if you're selling on Amazon, they have all these analytics, like how many reviews you get, how many pages read. So it's not just about how many books are sold, but with Kindle Unlimited, we as authors get paid on how many pages are read. So if someone picks up my 300-page book and they read 200 of it and never finish it, I still get paid on a portion of that 200 pages. So there's a lot of analytics in there that are involved in, making sure you get the word out there to people.
Yeah, and it is very important, and I always tell people that when you get a book, it is so wonderful if you are just kind enough to take that extra few minutes to go in and write a review. Absolutely. And say something nice. And don't, I hate people who go onto Amazon and say, oh, well, on page 37, there was a misspelling, and on page 7, and I'm talking, somebody did this to, you know, a very major author who actually, he was in a very bad mood when I talked to him. He said, somebody actually went in to his book, and they write on Amazon, you know, page 37, there's a misspelling. Page 302, there's the wrong verb. And he'd say, what? Why would you do that? Don't do that kind of thing. That's not nice.
I would say, if you're going to leave a nice, positive review,
exactly.
Then.
As my mother said, if you don't have something nice to say, keep your big mouth shut. No, she didn't say that. She just said something polite, like, one does not have to say anything.
Right, but the reviews are important, and you know, I can see my sales, and I can see that I'm selling a lot, but people just don't like to read, you know, write reviews. It's just like when you go rent a car and they give you the little receipt and say, oh, there's a survey, go take a survey on our website, and you might have had the best service at that rental car, but you aren't going to go to their website and write a review or, you know, comment a survey. But it is important in the Amazon world.
It is. It's very important in the very Amazon important. World and Amazon controls the world. Yeah. So, I mean, what can we do? Well, you know, Pam, I think the new book is great. I think you've hit a real a market that's always expanding, because people, and I think with all the problems in the world, cozy mysteries are so wonderful. I mean, they really turn off the television, read a cozy mystery, calm down. I think a cozy mystery, you have some excitement, but it calms your heart rate.
It does.
Because if you listen to the news, you're like going crazy. I mean, nobody.
Yeah, there's not a lot of gore and, you know.
Yeah. And the news on television is all horrible. So just find a cozy mystery. And so I think, Pam, you've done a great job with this book. And I hope that people will go out there and get Peppermint Mocha Murder. And it's by Pam Moll. And it's M-O-L-L. So it's easy to find. But type in Peppermint Mocha. And wonderful recipes. As a matter of fact, I was hoping. Now, Pam was so sweet. She brought me in autograph books, which are so nice. And I really do appreciate. But I was hoping she was going to bring in
gooey butter cake.
Gooey butter cake. I have the recipe right here. The gooey butter cake. I'm going to go home and make that this afternoon. Because today, I think, is a gooey butter cake kind of day, don't you think?
Absolutely. It goes great with coffee.
Oh, it goes great with coffee. And it's a wonderful recipe. So get the book, and you'll have the recipe there, and you will really enjoy it. And Pam, I want to thank you so much for being in today.
Well, thank you for having
me,
Nancy.
Because, you know, it's just, I love to see an author who is having fun with her writing, and you certainly are doing that. And you share that fun with your readers, and with the wonderful characters that you've developed. It's just fun to see. And I know that your second book is going to come out soon.
Yes, it should be out by June.
By June. So Pam's going to be back here in June. That's for sure. We're going
to
have her back.
I'd love to come back.
We'll have her back. I love to have authors back on their release dates. So we'll have Pam back, and we'll talk more about her entire cozy mystery series, okay? And meanwhile, I want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. Is that correct, Pam?
Oh, absolutely.
And to hear them in audible version. I don't know, you don't have audible yet, but
it's coming soon.
It's coming soon. And maybe someday on the big screen or the little screen. We don't mind. We'll take the little screen, right? We'll take the TV series. Hallmark Channel any day. But meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so nice to me, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And everybody, just be kind, be nice, turn off the news, and read Pam's book. That's what I say.
Thank you, Pam. And leave a review.
I leave a review. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.